Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
From WBEZ Chicago and PRX, this is Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. This week, we're talking with the outspoken Chicago rapper Vic Mensa about music, racism, gun violence, and more.
People that aren't from Chicago sometimes don't understand how it is that you could be 5 blocks from the projects and 5 blocks from Obama's house. But it's a real thing.
Plus, we'll review the new album from art pop musician Tune Yards and pay tribute to Dolores O'Riordan, the lead singer of the Cranberries, and trumpet legend Hugh Masekela.
That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and Greg, later on in the show, we'll be talking with Chicago rapper Vic Mensa, an incredible talent who is fast rising, has been opening arena shows for Jay-Z, put out a phenomenal album we both were fond of, reviewed last year. But first, we've got some new music.
Giving me a heart attack, cack, cack, we jump so high but fall right back. Giving me a heart attack, cack, cack, don't let me lose my soul. Giving me a heart attack, cack, cack, we jump so high but fall right back. Giving me a heart attack, cack, cack, don't let me lose my soul.
That's a track called Heart Attack from the new Tune Yards album, I Can Feel You Creep Into My Private Life, the fourth studio album from Tune Yards, a.k.a. Meryl Garbus, a previous guest on Sound Opinions. She started out as a ukulele-playing, drumming, vocal loop, triggering one-woman band on stage, and that has evolved over the last decade or so. She started out, studying Swahili in Kenya, African music, got into puppet theater of all things. She was creating these puppet operas for kids with her ukulele, and that evolved into a nanny job where she started writing some songs into a small digital tape recorder. That became her debut album in 2009. Bird Brains. She began working with a producer and a bassist by the name of Nate Brenner, who is now her life partner. He has co-produced her latest record, I Can Feel You Creep Into My Private Life. That's her fourth studio record. She's evolved from that one-woman band into a more full-on production style. Let's hear what she's up to next. Here's a track called Home from Tune Yards, I Can Feel You Creep Into My Private Life on Sound Opinions.
Oh,
That is Home from the new album by Toon Yards, I Can Feel You Creep Into My Private Life. Greg, the things that Meryl Garbus is doing with her voice in that track in particular, she is no Bjork, but she is, has got that kind of ambition.
Mm-hmm.
That instrument that she has, her voice is so expressive and so powerful, and so is her intellect and her honesty. The line that slays me on this album, "I smell the blood in my voice."
I cry my white woman tears, carving grooves in my cheeks to display what I meant.
Immediately before writing this album, in trying to address social justice, she said she was on a six-month meditation workshop to try to learn what she could do as someone who has used African rhythms, who has lived in Africa, as a white person in the realm of social justice. That sounds like heady and heavy stuff.
Yep.
It's not, though. This is a dance album, heavily influenced by 70s disco, and I think even more so by the classic sounds of Chicago house. There is a joy here. Lose yourself in moving your body. There is also a conscience. And if we look at that title, I Can Feel You Creep Into My Private Life, what I think she is saying is that the very troubling things regarding social justice and Black Lives Matter and the Me Too movement are all intruding on all of us all the time. What can we do? I think there's a little bit of fatigue in the indie rock underground that loved her so much on her debut. You know, she was at the height of her powers when she was on Sound Opinions in 2011. This is an evolving artist who's gone somewhere new, and this is a great record. It's a buy-it record.
Yeah, I think there's some criticism because there is a lot of furrowed brow intellectualizing going on here. She's a very smart woman.
She's done that from the beginning.
And she's sort of beating herself up a lot in this record.
Yeah.
You know, it's the white guilt thing, right? And we're tired of that, you know? Okay, well, you know, maybe that's the way you can interpret this. But as you said, you know, it could very easily be ponderous, but she's pairing cultural appropriation, the end of the world, these are heavy subjects, with this incredibly liberating music, this body music. I mean, if you don't like the words, tune those out and just dance your butt off on the dance floor. You know, this is a very danceable record. White privilege. I think the key for me about this record, and people talk about this whole notion of white guilt, what really we're talking about is that we're all in this together. We cannot make progress as a species if we don't confront ourselves about our own failings. And I think that's essentially, she needs to be better. By extension, she's asking us to be better, and she's saying that we can dance to this music. This music will pull us together. I love this record. It's a buy-it record for me.
Didn't I tell you we was gonna make it to the top? Didn't I tell you this was the new birth of the rock? Didn't I say I didn't send you that money when you needed it cause your mind? Didn't I say I didn't? Didn't I take up the morning just to ride with you? Yeah.
This is Sound Opinions, and the song you're hearing is Say I Didn't by our guest this week, rapper Vic Mensa. You know, Vic's only 24 years old, but he has been around the Chicago scene for about a decade now.
Mm.
He was releasing mixtapes when he was a kid in high school, coming up alongside a guy by the name of Chance the Rapper. These guys were in a crew together, the Save Money crew, which still exists. It is one of the epicenters of what I can only be called a renaissance in Chicago hip-hop over the last decade. He has been working with and noticed by quite an array of artists. Jay-Z, for example, signed him to his Roc Nation label. Mensa opened a concert for Beyoncé at Soldier Field in Chicago
a couple of summers ago.
Yeah, and he finally got around to putting out his debut solo album last year called The Autobiography. It was executive produced by No ID, a legendary figure. He's worked with people like Common, Vince Staples, Jay-Z. He does not work with just anybody.
Yeah.
And he wanted to work with Vic Mensa. So that says a lot about how he is regarded in the wider hip-hop community.
Greg, obviously a supremely talented rapper, a writer, musician, but Vic Mensa is also a social activist. He has taken dedicated stands on issues like Native American rights in Standing Rock. Recently had an op-ed published in Time about human rights abuses against Palestinians. His focus on justice goes far and wide from the south and west sides of Chicago around the world. Let's welcome Vic Mensa to Sound Opinions. Vic, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me, man. It's really cool to hear both of your voices in person. I've been listening to them for a long time.
Well, it's an honor to have
you. My mom is going to be psyched.
You know, that's what Kanye used to say. That's what Common used to say. That's what Chance used to say.
They all love their moms.
Yeah.
And the autobiography, you poured your heart out into this record, and it gives us an opportunity to talk about, you know, you're a young artist, but you've made a lot of music. Memories on 47th Street is the second track on the record after the intro, and it really takes us back to where you started.
I am the first son of Betsy and Edward Mensa. Made love and made a legend. Woodlawn and 47th. Gunshots outside my window. Drug deals out by the sit-go. But mama always made sure the tooth fairy found my pillow. My pops was always working. He put the family first. Chicago Saturdays in the park and Sundays in church.
It seems like there's an autobiographical arc, obviously, to this record, where you take us from your childhood up to, you know, right in the moment where you came through some hardships and sort of saw the light at the end of this record. So obviously this is something that you don't do lightly. It's not just a collection of tracks, but it's almost like a novel or a book that you would read about somebody. So how did you come to a place where you wanted to make a record in this way, a complete record, beginning, middle, and end?
So the title of the album, the autobiography, I put on the cover As Told by Vic Mensa, is inspired by the autobiography of Malcolm X as told to Alex Haley. And something I always admired about that book was Malcolm X's journey through these different phases and cycles, and being a hustler and a pimp, and then being incarcerated and becoming a Muslim, and then being a spokesman for the Nation of Islam, and then realizing that maybe this isn't the actual way, and coming kind of around like a full arc to a place of like more peace and more inclusiveness.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like necessarily a conscious decision for me to like follow that footstep with my own story, but I did call it the autobiography because I felt that was really representative of what I wanted to do, depicting the ways that these different events impacted my character and the shaping of me as a man. I knew I had to spend time in childhood. I knew I had to speak about the duality of life as a mixed race kid in Hyde Park on 47th Street, because that's the edge of Hyde Park.
Mm. Right, know, between two worlds.
You're right between two worlds. And I tell people a lot of time, it's like people that aren't from Chicago sometimes don't understand how it is that you could be, you know, five blocks from the projects and five blocks from Obama's house. Mm-hmm. But it's a real thing, and that's because Chicago has this really stark economic disparity. I knew I had to spend time there and go through, you know, this really just tumultuous relationship that I was in, volatile, and I had to talk about drugs, I had to talk about addiction, I had to talk about violence in the streets, and it's oftentimes a lot of dark things, but it's kind of like how when I was a kid in school, I remember I get all these A's, and then I get one C or a check mark or something, and that's all my dad paid attention to.
Well, your parents were both educators, right?
Yeah. My dad teaches at UIC currently. He's a PhD professor of health economics. My mom is a physical therapist in CPS, so she spends most of her time on the South Side, like working with mentally challenged kids.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, same. Common had a similar upbringing, and Kanye obviously had a similar upbringing. And one of the things that drives me crazy in hip hop, so much of it is so reductive. And you know, you're following in the footsteps of talking about this community, of educators and people who go to church and people who were Black Panthers in soup kitchens and, you know, and gangbangers and drug dealers. I mean, it's a much broader spectrum life in the Black community on the west or south sides of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, our rappers here talk about that.
Right.
And you know, Hotlanta and often New York and often L.A. don't.
Well, you know, they have. I think that just like everything, hip-hop moves in cycles, you know? That's the way of the world, is that things come and go and they come back around. And, you know, you've obviously had artists like Ice Cube and N.W.A. That opened up America's eyes to what it was like in Compton. You know, somebody in New York, like a Mos Def or something, you know? You've had a lot of artists, but I think Chicago is unique in the maybe draconian manner of its segregation. I feel like it does a, and I think it does a lot for the art though, because the South Side of Chicago was created in a very exacted and purposeful way, you know, and if you were Black, you couldn't get alone outside of the South or West sides of Chicago. So I think you have this situation where you have a lot of struggle that is really self-contained in there. Like you said, you also have people that were Black Panthers in soup kitchens, and you got activists and educated Black people all in the mix with a lot of poverty and crime and everything that comes along with poverty.
Out of the fire, I found a fire inside. You can see the pain still alive in my eyes. I'm loved and I'm lost through heaven and hell. They turned their back on me too many times to turn back now.
Being in this concrete jungle that also has a mentally advanced element to it, I think that's what makes some of us from Chicago have the perspective that we do in rap. You know, I know for me, it was listening to Lupe and Kanye when I was a kid. I was like, Lupe, Kanye, and Common. Common was my real favorite rapper.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Growing up, that was and to this day, you know, still one of my favorite rappers.
I wonder if these whack niggas realize they whack. And they the reason that my people say they tired of rap. Inspired by Black Muslims and Christians, pushing compasses and other traditions and other conditions of the city, the city.
And I think that influenced like my generation a lot, because we're seeing some of the most lyrically gifted, special musicians to ever touch a microphone that are rapping about the streets we grew up on.
Yeah. But, you know, you know, all of those artists, Lupe, Kanye, Common, you know, they're soft. They're backpackers. They're granola eaters is what Greg and I have been fighting. You know, we've gotten the throne
for a long time.
Lupe has sat where you're sitting. We've talked about this, right? Because they say, yes, there's violence, there's crime, there's drugs, but they also say there's community and love and hope and education, right? Those are not cool things, quote unquote, cool things to rap about. And yet the perspective on the autobiography is all of these things come together.
Yeah, because coming into this record, I wanted to make something that I felt really represented me as a person. There was a point in time when I had a collection of music for a different album, and I was in a dark place personally. I was using a lot of drugs. I had lost all the serotonin and dopamine and all the other things that make you smile. You know, I was missing all of those.
You were suicidal, you said.
I was bad, yeah. It wasn't good for me. And the music I was making was, it was dark in that way. Like, it was dark, guilty, and just, like, self-loathing, you know? And I was talking to my therapist, and I was telling him, man, I just want to make music that feels like the person I am. We were taking a walk, and, you know, I saw this girl on the street, and, you know, just, like, got a number, and I'm just messing around, just having fun. And then he's like, you know, see, you are a fun guy. You over here being all all dark. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, you know, I just want to make music that is like me, you know, that it feels like me. And people that know me know that I guess I'm a serious person in that I talk about serious things all the time, but I'm always joking. You know, I'm always smiling.
There's a lot of humor on this
album. I'm always having fun. So it's like So with this album, I wanted to make something that felt like the person that you meet in real life.
This feel like a rebirth, another day on this green earth. I couldn't ask for much more, man. Shit could be worse. A fresh pair of jeans, a nice clean shirt. I'm on my island in the sun. Shout out to Weezer. Who can you count on these days in 2017? Lil... Big city, bigger dreams. I cop the house out in the hills just to switch scenes. And now they back home saying, how could Vic leave?
Even though I have a song like Home Record that is just like kind of heavy in how messed up the story is. But it's funny though. You know, I'm like, I want to speak to it. But as a minority, I had to hide the weed first. That's a priority. Because it was real. The police came in my crib. Yo, this was one of the only times I've ever heard a knock on the door and they say police, and I'm like, come in.
Now we wrestling in the kitchen. How the hell you get so strong? She pull the dresses out the cabinet. All the knives fell on the floor. Whoa, I drive you crazy, but you love that shit. I'm looking down at the knives. Please don't cut that. I mean, she ain't know I was your new. She like, it's time to go new. Peace. And then police come in the crib looking all out the window, and shorty come out the bathroom mad as a schizo. I want to speak to her, but as a minority, I had to hide the weed first. That's a priority.
You know, it's interesting you should bring that up, Vic, because the precursor to this record was an EP that you put out in 2016 called There's a Lot Going On, and the key track there was a song called 16 Shots that you wrote and debuted at Soldier Field, opening for Beyonce, and everybody's like going, wow, what a song. I mean, this was a really powerful moment at a time in the city where there was a lot of outrage. The song was written about the release of the video of the Laquan McDonald police shooting in Chicago and the protests, the rage in the streets that followed that. This song almost seemed to be a soundtrack for those protests. Laquan McDonald, this young African-American who was shot 16 times by police, caught on a video that was released. The young man was on the ground and continued to be shot by the police officer in the video. Obviously, there was an incredible amount of rage and an incredible amount of sense of injustice that your song really seemed to encapsulate.
Ready for the war, we got our boots strapped. 100 deep on State Street with a troop set. The mayor lying, say didn't see the video footage, and everybody wanna know where the truth at. On the south side where it's no trauma centers but the most trauma. A lot of cannons but you don't want no drama. I can't imagine if it was my own mama. Got a firstborn son, stole from her. He never had a chance, and we all know it's cause he black. Shot him 16 times, how the f*** is that?
16 Shots is one of my favorite records that I've done, and it's always one of my favorite records to perform. That's a record that I wanted to make since I was 16 years old. I recently got a piece of paper that was one of those classroom introductions from high school where it's like, you know, it's a little survey. It's like your favorite food and, like, you know, what's your favorite color? You know what I mean? And least favorite something was one of the questions. And I was like 15 years old and I was like Chicago police officer. Just because I picked up early on that the way that this police state is structured in America is just an extension of slavery. You know, it's an overseer mentality. They ride the horses, you know, officer from overseer. You need a little clarity, check the similarity. You know what I mean? And I was loving KRS-One, so yeah. I'm like, wow, that makes a lot of sense to me. So to make the record 16 Shots, I wanted to make that record for a long time, like I said, and so when it did come together and it was born out of being in the streets after Laquan McDonald was killed by Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke, who goes free today.
They threw a little girl down on the pavement, pushed her with a bike and said, "Stay out the way." She was bleeding on the ground through her braces. This what happened when they don't stay in their places. The mayor dumping weight, he fired the superintendent. But resignation come with bonuses and recognition. So we gon' break in the stores on Magnificent Mile. And if we got a goal, let's go to prison in style. Cops killing kids and staying out of jail. But Bobby Shmurda can't even catch bail. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now I got everybody yelling out 12.
So you're writing this song on the heels of that video being exposed and sort of amplifying what was already happening in Chicago for a long time, police violence on the black community.
Yeah, I mean, we grew up with this. I was like, all right, I'm on the first plane back to Chicago. And that energy that I felt there inspired me to make that song, in addition to, you know, just years of abuse from police. And I talk about some on this record. I talk about, you know, just being mistaken for somebody else, and this time when the police pulled me over when I was a kid, pulled me over on a bike, you know what I mean?
At age 12, I learned the difference between white and black. Police pulled me off of my bike, I landed on my back. Back to reality, oops, a victim of gravity. Where they pull you down and keep you there, depending on how you keep your hair.
Pulled me over on a bike, like accusing me of running from them yesterday, and then like, do you have a twin brother? I just started to realize, you know, and then as we got a little bit older and you become a threat in their eyes, then now it's like guns drawn, everybody get on the ground, like we got a call about something, who knows what. And it's just a culture that's been allowed to fester in not just Chicago, but in the nation at large. Power corrupts, absolute power corrodes. And in Chicago and everywhere in the United States, honestly, you can't tell me none of these police officers have been guilty. You know, nobody's guilty. Not one. Not one of them is spending their life in prison. Like, they're human beings, and they've committed pretty much the most cardinal sin that you can commit as a human being, to kill. You know, to kill not in self-defense, not in time of war. I mean, we are in a war, but to kill, and a lot of the times to kill children, and we have it on tape, like consistently we have it on tape, nobody's doing prison time. So that's where the anger in a song like 16 Shots come from. So I know there have been police officers that, you know, were like trying to shut me down at concerts, or like, you know, trying to direct people away from my stage at Lollapalooza, and, you know, saying if I perform this thing outside at this event in Chicago, city ordinance, they're going to shut me down and things like that. But I feel it's just necessary, you know, to fight back.
I want you to rage into the night. I want you to blaze into the light before your final flight. Before you fight, you fight.
When we come back, more of our conversation with Chicago rapper Vic Mensa, including talking about working with Pharrell. Plus, we'll pay tribute to Dolores O'Riordan of the Cranberries and You Messicala. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. Every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, Lemonade Shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Coffee and cigarettes remind me of you, babe. You pick me up in your old Buick station wagon with the radio broke. I roll the window up, you turn the AC on. Who knew you'd be so cold?
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and that's the song Coffee and Cigarettes by our guest this week, Chicago rapper Vic Mensa, who in 2017 released his debut album, The Autobiography, one of the most well-received albums of the year. Now I want to get back into what we were talking about earlier, which was that song 16 Shots, and I want to talk about the really poignant music video for the song in which you were involved. You know, it's an interesting response that you're giving in that video. There's this constant war going on in the streets of Chicago and other urban areas between young African-American men and the police. The response to this sort of outrage would typically be a violent one. It seems like that's the direction we're heading in, violence breeding more violence. But at the end of the video, instead of attacking the officers after they've committed this affront to your community, you tip the gun downward and say, you know, a truce, an attempt at coming to some kind of solution that doesn't involve more bloodshed. So, Vic, it seems like you're proposing a solution that's different from what has been said in many hip-hop tracks before.
I think that the idea at the end of the 16 Shots video, where through, like, all of this brutality, I don't shoot back, I don't attack, I push the gun down.
Right.
I push the gun down and I walk away. And it's not necessarily a Martin Luther King approach, just like so much as a to kind of what I was just speaking about, an empathetic approach where it's like, I see you're scared, police officer, you know, Van Dyke, like I see you're scared. I mean, I think that it's probably mixed in with some hatred and all these things, but you've been taught that, you know? It's kind of trying to understand that this division is taught and that it has a real perpetrator, you know? The real perpetrator here, even for a song like 16 Shots, even though I'm saying some pretty graphic things towards police officers, the real perpetrator is not your average beat cop, you know, just like on duty. The perpetrator are the orchestrators of this culture that allows it to fester, like I said, that sets these criminals free. The perpetrator is really in the fabric of American society. And the idea at the end of 16 Shots, that empathetic approach, that's also what the arc of the album takes me to. The final song on the album, after I go through my childhood and this tough relationship and loss and taking part in violence and drug addiction and mental health, at the end of it all, I come around to a place where I'm saying we could be free. We could be free from all of this, you know, if we knew we were slaves to the pains of each other.
We could be free if we only knew we were slaves to the pains of each other. One thing I believe I could learn, to see my enemy as my brother, then we could be free, truly. And love could wash away all the sorrows. I'm not afraid to bleed if it means we make a better today, not tomorrow.
It's a difficult thing to live by, but I'm saying if I could learn to see my enemy as my brother, that's tough, but it's necessary, and in certain points in the album, I had to step out of, you know, my reality and my emotion to try to see my enemy as my brother. There's a song called Heaven on Earth where I speak from three perspectives. The first perspective is my big bro, Cam. He was killed in Chicago on the South Side, so I'm writing a letter to him in heaven. Mm-hmm. The second perspective is him writing a letter to me from heaven, and the third perspective is spoken from his killer, explaining the events of that night. And at the end of the killer's verse, I hypothesize, you know, what he may be thinking.
I let two shots go. Before I knew it, he was laying on the ground in a puddle of blood. I know it ain't right. I think about it every night. I ain't even mean to take his life. We living in the streets where ain't
free and your man just had to pay the ultimate price. A week later, I saw your post on the gram, RP Dare with a picture of him. I recognized the face from somewhere, then I realized.
In that verse, I also try to think about, you know, maybe he just had a baby. Maybe he didn't even, you know, he didn't even mean to kill him. He said, I was scared. I ain't gonna lie. That's what it was. I thought he had a gun. My eyes went black. I let two shots go. Before I knew it, he was laying on the ground in a puddle of blood. Mm-hmm. Because everybody's afraid, you know. Your average gangbanger that's like just letting it go in daytime because he sees his ops, he's afraid. He doesn't want to get shot, you know. He's afraid, and that fear can turn into violent aggression. It's the same with the tiki torch carrying white supremacists. They're afraid. They're afraid of losing what they see to be as their, you know, their white right, you know? Right.
Well, heaven on earth, there's also, you're sitting here in a Nirvana t-shirt. There's a great line. I think you're talking to Cam. I was smoking weed with Kurt Cobain. He says he likes your
yeah.
But the idea of, you know, if we could all just sit down and get high and listen to music we love, right?
If we could sit down, like, just because, you know, the thing, too, is that a lot of these people, they don't consider themselves to be racist, but they say really racist things and then they don't consider themselves to be racist because there's probably like one black dude that like they work with at the auto mechanic shop or something. And like and they're pretty cool, you know.
So I'm like, I don't hate all black people. I like that one guy.
I know there's a point in time when these tiki torches have sat and like had a civil like interaction with a black person. If we could sit down and just turn off the hate for a second and just smoke some good dope, like I swear I think we could fix a lot of problems, man.
Well, and you know, speaking of Nirvana, I think one of the things that's always been true about your music is that you're very genre free.
Right.
You're not just one thing. On the autobiography, you welcome all that. And you know, to Jim's point earlier about people, they love to stereotype rappers and artists in general get stereotyped. That didn't seem to be a major concern for you. And you found, as an executive producer, you're working with No ID, who picks his projects very carefully, we should note.
Yeah.
He does not work with just any. He's coming off the Jay-Z record.
It's a giant.
It's
a giant.
Truth.
So you have the shape of this record that is touching on lots of genres, sometimes multiple genres in the same song.
Weezer's on the record.
How important...
Weezer's.
Where did that musical eclecticism in your own life come in from?
Yeah, you know, I was more into rock music as a kid than I was rap music. I didn't get into rap music until a little bit later, maybe around like 7th grade or 6th grade or something like that. But before that, I loved Guns N' Roses. Sweet Child of Mine and Tupac, I Ain't Mad At You. Those are my two favorite songs. In no specific order. I was listening to all that, man, like buying those records on vinyl too, because like around the time when I did discover hip-hop, I discovered hip-hop through skateboarding. Mm-hmm. You know, I was into skateboarding years before I was ever into rap music. And I discovered hip-hop really through this Zoo York mixtape. They used to have these Zoo York skate tapes that they called mixtapes. And there was a part, it might have been Harold Hunter, rest in peace, who had a part skating to KRS-One, Step Into a World.
Step Into a World.
So then I started getting into hip hop, and I started from the ground up, you know, going through all the different eras. I mean, we was even buying like Grandmaster Flash, and like I know that hip hop ain't really what's in right now, but I'm so hip hop. It's like it's kind of scary. Like, you know, we were over there really breakdancing. Me and Nico, who went by Donnie Trumpet for some time, we were breakdancing in the basement. Mm-hmm. He bought turntables. We would listen to N.W.A., then we'd be like, oh, Express Yourself. Let's see where'd that come from. Then we would go and buy Jimmy Castor Bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was already coming into hip-hop being a fan of other genres of music, particularly rock and roll music. And then in hip hop, I started to listen to all these different genres that came from the samples, you know, and digging the samples and checking out what Dilla was sampling. So I was spending countless hours just like a stoned kid at Hyde Park Records.
Take me away from all the drama, man. I miss the old days. With all of these backstabbers, I feel like the OJs. I wanna open up my parachute, but it's cold playing this role when you never been the type to role play. It's something about this game, man. It f*** with you mentally. Like football players leaving the league with traumatic brain injury. And eventually, you'll never be the same as you were. Then you look back at your life and everything is a blur.
Seems like with... Autobiography, your writing has caught up with your musical vision, just in terms of the depth of what you're going for. That record culminates in a series of songs where there is sort of a light. It comes from this very dark place, the violence that, you know, you address your personal drug use in a very frank manner. The song Wings seems to be like a real turning point in the record, where the record sort of shifts gears right there. And that's a record you made with Pharrell Williams.
Yes.
And that particular track seems to be coming out of some real personal strife.
It's one of my biggest influences right there. Pharrell, I mean, I think that Pharrell is a wizard and influenced me a lot as a kid because he was this fly rocker running rap. I always would tell people whenever they would ask me, dream collaboration, I say for real, and just manifested it into reality. And I was going through a certain situation the day that I got into the studio with Pharrell, and, you know, just this dishonest Chicago dude, you know, he had basically stolen a large sum of money from me. And you know, I was like, I was livid, but I was also coming off of like the situations in this album, you know, a song like Down for Some Ignorance, where I had something kind of not the same, but similar happen to me, and somebody I knew well stole from me, and then I acted in a wrong way, something that didn't do much good for anybody.
And I'm down for some ignorance. Run up in this crib, lay down all the witnesses. In the take a ride and we packing this a business trip. Me with the cannon in my hand, can you picture this?
I went into the studio with Pharrell and I told him what was going on because I was just visibly disturbed. And Pharrell was like, listen, man. You're lucky, actually. You're lucky for two reasons. You're lucky, one, because you're not the person that has to go to sleep and wake up knowing that this is who they are, you know, to look yourself in the eye and know that you're just a liar and a thief and a cheat. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And secondly, you're lucky because you have the ability to move on. You're not, this isn't going to break you, you know? You can move on. And so then Pharrell played this record, Wings, and, you know, I just flipped because the music was, it was saying exactly what I needed at that moment. It was like, spread my wings and fly. Good at doing that, like saying the simplest things that, because they're so simple, have the most broad meaning. And so I just took that music and it switches into the NERD type of, you know, fast drums. I took that idea and I was just like, you know what? I've wanted to talk for a long time about my struggles with addiction and also just like recapping all of this chaos that I talk about in the album and like breaking it down and letting it all out, you know, letting it out how I feel. So I have a song called Homewrecker where I destroyed this relationship just by being unfaithful and just being on this rock star life. And then on the other side, you know, I have the condemning of like people close to me for lying to me.
Yeah.
And so it's like there's this Gemini thing going on with me.
Yeah, but the difference, Vic, is you came out with wisdom.
Right.
We have been talking to Vic Mensa at Sound Opinions. Vic, it's been a pleasure having you, man.
It's an honor to be here, man. Like I said, my mom's going to, she's going to freak, man. I know we'll, you guys' voices really well.
We'll get a mug for her, okay, Vic?
All right, cool.
That wraps up our conversation with Vic Mensa. If you have opinions on the Chicago rapper, call and leave us a message at 888-859-1800. Coming up next, we'll pay tribute to the late Dolores O'Riordan, lead singer of the Cranberries, and Greg will share his thoughts on the South African musical legend, Hugh Masekela. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
And that's what makes it so great, hard to let you go, cause girl, you're gorgeous.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and that is Grazin' in the Grass by the great Hugh Masekela, who died at the age of 78 on January 23rd in his home of Johannesburg after a battle with prostate cancer. Grazin' in the Grass, a big hit in the 60s, a big crossover hit for this great trumpeter who was mostly associated with the South African jazz scene in the 50s before leaving that country for basically an exiled existence for the next several decades because the apartheid in his native country was so oppressive. This man traveled in some heavy-duty circles. I mean, Dizzy Gillespie and Louis Armstrong were fans. There's a great picture of him leaping in one of the ghettos in South Africa with holding Louis Armstrong's trumpet aloft.
What a celebratory, beautiful picture, yeah.
Yeah, triumphant moment. And from that, this kid, this street kid from South Africa, coming to America and performing at the 1967 Monterey Pop Festival, becoming a pop star with Grazin' in the Grass. Well, some of you may know the cover version of that hit with vocals on it. He did over 40 albums in the course of his career and life. I think the most poignant music that he created were protest songs about what was going on in his country.
Bring back Nelson Mandela, bring him back home to Soweto. I want to see him walking down the streets of South Africa. No, no, bulls, no.
And the fact that he was able to go back to South Africa and live there to see the revolution and the protest that he advocated in his songs finally come to fruition in the end of apartheid in the early 90s in South Africa, I think was a particularly powerful statement for his music. The great Hugh Masekela on trumpet, dead at the age of 78.
Greg, that, of course, is a little bit of Linger, the big breakthrough hit in the 90s by the Irish rock band The Cranberries. Dolores O'Riordan, lead singer of that band, was found dead at the age of 46 on January 15th in a London hotel room. Sad. An incredible voice. I think that after the biggies of the alternative 90s explosion, you know, your Smashing Pumpkins and Nirvana and Soundgarden, you know, there were a lot of great bands that in a previous era would have been, you know, underground college rock club bands. But in this weird moment after Nirvana, the year punk broke, everybody gets signed and has 10 minutes, you know, as a superstar. The Cranberries were an uncompromising band. This was a hard rocking group led by a woman with an incredible voice. She's wearing combat boots and she's in a t-shirt and she's not pandering to sexist stereotypes for a front woman. She is, in fact, harshly political. The second album comes out. And the story, according to her former manager, she wants to lead with the single Zombie, which is about two children who were killed in a 1993 bombing in England by the Irish Republican Army. She said that it was a song about man's inhumanity to man, man's inhumanity to child. And apparently Ireland gave her $1 million check and said, work on another song, anything but this, and she tore it up. Hmm. This was a woman with principles and character. I interviewed her. Incredible, inspirational strength. A tough go of it for the last couple of years. There were two solo albums that came out after the group broke up in 2003, not particularly well received. And there was an attempt at a reunion. She has said she attempted suicide in the past with pills. She's said she's been in therapy. She's been diagnosed as bipolar. The autopsy results are not in the cause of death at age 46. But I think her spirit and her music lives on. You got to play Zombie. For my money, as a political rock statement out of Ireland, this is better than anything U2 ever did. And I'll fight Bono to the death if he wants to argue about that. Dolores O'Riordan with the Cranberries, Zombie on Sound Opinions. Dolores O'Riordan fronting the Cranberries. Zombie is the song. She is dead at the age of 46. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Jim, we're going to be talking about cover songs, what makes a good one and what makes a bad one.
Sound Opinions was produced by Brendan Banaszak, Alex Claiborne, and Ayanna Contreras.
Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
New messages.
Hi, this is Rob from Madison, Ohio, and I want to comment on your new wave show you just had. I really think you guys should have mentioned Blondie. They were the original new wave band. Blondie was the prototype for all kinds of other bands, and they started the skinny tie thing. Not to mention the blonde hair with roots. Gotta love this show, though. God bless.
Hey, it's Steven calling from Evanston, Illinois, and I just wanted to say thanks for Allison Moyet. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. She's awesome. I mean, wow. And just as amazing today as she ever was. I love her. So, anyway, thanks for sharing her with us on my drive home. Okay. Bye.
Do I dress for every situation? Moving through the doorway of a nation. Pick me up and shake the doubt. Baby, I can't do without. Don't mess around.
I remember fondly Duran Duran, but it's interesting how that memory comes about. You see, in the 80s, I was a metalhead. And as such, I looked down upon the pop music of the day and was against it. I went against my grain, and I did not like Duran Duran. But one day recently, about a year ago, I'm watching Axis TV, and there is a live band playing what sounded like pop music, but older pop music. What caught my attention and why I stopped flipping channels was because there were actual musicians all playing their actual instruments, and they were really good. And I'm watching, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is Duran Duran. When you want me, sat fascinated watching because these guys are phenomenal musicians. And I really enjoyed it. And ever since then, I've told childhood friends of mine, you're not going to believe this, but I like Duran Duran now. They were a really good band. So there you go. Have a good day.
Hi, my name is Lana Lee from Houston, Texas, and I'm calling about new wave music that I loved. I loved Dale Bozzio from Missing Persons, the song Words. We used to play it over and over and over on our record player in my early teens, and we even covered it in my garage band in Chicago, Illinois. Bye.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.